Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Cinema Theology. I am one of your hosts, Josias Flores, and I'm here with your other host. Yeah, again, this is the crossroads of movies and theology. And today we have a different kind of movie that we've been, from the ones that we've been doing. Dido, what are we talking about today?
So, as many of you may have guessed, we're trying to do kind of like different types of movies. Last week, we did a romantic comedy. Before that, we did Just Mercy. So today, we decided to go into the genre of psychological thriller. So today's movie is Shutter Island, directed by Martin Scorsese, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Mark Ruffalo, and Ben Kingsley. And this is a very, very interesting one.
And we gotta do a disclaimer here, Dido, because this is this movie is rated R and can be disturbing to some viewers. Yeah, I think there's some themes to be gleaned here, but it may not be for all audiences, so we just wanna throw that out there. Anything else you wanna add to the disclaimer? Anything that you might wanna let viewers know of?
Another disclaimer we need to make as we're going to dive into this movie is that we're going to be sharing spoilers. I don't think spoilers have been a big issue for a lot of the films that we have reviewed on this podcast, but for this one especially, I think spoilers play an important part because it is a psychological thriller, and a big part of psychological thrillers usually is a subjectivity, and there's usually some sort of twist that happens, and there is one here in this movie. So if you have ever thought of checking out Shutter Island and you haven't, we would suggest you probably go do that and come back so you can hear us talk about it. That being said, what is Shutter Island about? Shutter Island, we start off with a U.S. Marshal, Teddy Daniels, with his partner Chuck, who have been sent to Shutter Island. Shutter Island is a prison / psychiatric ward where they keep the most violent mental patients in the U.S. So they have Teddy Daniels and Chuck, go to Shutter Island in order to investigate the disappearance of Rachel Solando, who is a patient who was convicted of murdering 3 children, and that's why she is in this ward, but now she has escaped with no apparent explanation as to how. And so we follow the investigation, but then we realize that there may be more going on at this facility than meets the eye. There are some allegations of Nazi mind control tests, some things that you may hear come out of projects like MKUltra, some really creepy stuff going on. But at the end, we actually find out that Teddy Daniels, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, is not a U.S. Marshal anymore. He was, but now he is actually a patient at this ward, and he has been. And this entire investigation has been one extremely elaborate play-along game that the hospital has been playing with him the entire time in order to get him to admit to himself that he murdered his wife because she murdered his 3 children. And he cannot deal with the pain and the guilt of that event, so he has kind of made an alternate reality to kind of comfort himself, in which he is a U.S. Marshal. He is investigating this place because of allegations and so on and so forth. So it's quite convoluted, and maybe you didn't understand it, but this is basically what the film is about. As we mentioned, it has some disturbing stuff in it, not only visually, but also thematically. What are some of the themes that we find in this movie, Josias?
Well, also, before we go there, I want to say that some people disagree with that interpretation of the movie. So the way the movie is set up is for you to kind of think about what is the reality of it. And so for most of the movie, right, Leonardo DiCaprio's character believes that he is, again, the marshal that's investigating. And then at some part of the movie, about halfway, he starts believing that they are going to try to make him think that he's crazy and keep him there in order to cover up the illegal activity or the shady activity that's happening at Shutter Island. And so at the end of the movie, it's shown that he's a patient, but some people disagree and say that it's actually what Leonardo DiCaprio's character was saying the whole time. So his name really is Teddy Daniels instead of Andrew Latus. And he because he realized he couldn't fight, you know, everything that was going to happen. He played along with the whole thing and agreed to say that indeed he was this other person that they were making him out to be. But in reality, he was never crazy. So I thought that was a fascinating interpretation that just adds to the whole layer of this movie, that you, from your point of view, you kind of get to make a decision as to what happens all the way till the end and what reality is for this character. So, kind of trippy, but pretty fascinating at the same time. Themes. Reality is a big theme in this movie. What is real? And I think the thing that made this stood out to me is the fact that even though Leonardo DiCaprio's character is you know, living out this whole situation, he doesn't see through and see what reality is, right? So his mind changes his reality because it can't handle the truth, so to speak. Which reminds me of another movie. You can't handle the truth. But anyway, that's another, Jack Nicholson. That's another point. Yeah. And so that to me, that's fascinating, because when we talk about biblical themes, you know, we multiple times in the Bible, we find this idea that individuals, when faced with God's truth, cannot handle it and choose to believe a lie instead of the truth, right? They gave up the truth for a lie. And so I think about a character, for example, like Pharaoh, who, when Moses goes and says, hey, please, God send me, we need to go out in the desert and worship him. And Pharaoh's like, no. And so Moses is like, okay, here's a sign from God that this is the truth, whatever, like this is what needs to happen. The staff changes into a serpent. And at first it's like, and we see this in Prince of Egypt, we talked about this, right? So you see that at first Pharaoh's like, whoa, but then his magicians come and like, oh, you know, it's all fake, it's all magic, whatever. And they do the same thing. And he like dismisses it. He's like, oh, that's not true. Even though there's evidences to the fact that this is God, with every plague challenging the gods of Egypt and saying, hey, they don't have the power that you're ascribing to them. I am the one true God. But he keeps denying the truth and he keeps accepting his false reality. So I found that pretty fascinating. You have another instance in Isaiah 6 when God talks to Isaiah and calls him out to be a prophet. And he says, hearing, you know, they will not hear, and seeing, they will not understand. They're sort of like a stubborn people, something to that effect. And basically saying that Isaiah, when you go out and share the message that I've given you, people will not believe you and they will not get it. Jesus will quote this again in the New Testament and the Gospels when he's asked about his parables, right? Like, why do you speak in parables? And then Jesus quotes this again because some people, even though they see reality, they will not understand it. Hearing they will not hear, seeing they will not understand. And anyway, there's more verses, but I want to take up too much of the time. To me, that was something that was fascinating. I will say one more thing about this denying reality thing, though, is that a lot of times I've noticed that something that is vital to the gospel is the idea that we are sinners, that we are flawed, and that we have fallen away from God's ideal for humanity, right? Like, we've lost the image of God in some sense. It's faded in us. And sometimes people, when they are faced with this reality, instead of accepting it, they will reject it and they will turn on their view of God because they want to preserve, you know, their identity, their image of themselves. And that's something that's happening here with the main character of the movie, because his reality is so terrible, he goes ahead and rejects that reality and creates his own alternate reality because he doesn't want to face the fact that he is a murderer, right? And so I see that also when it comes to the gospel and when it comes to the reality of we're all sinners. Some people will reject it and say, no, I'm not a bad person. I do good things. Forget your religion. Forget your God. That's not true. So to me, that was something that was fascinating and kind of stood out to me. Do you have anything to add to this? I feel like we can go deeper.
The theme, what is real? I think that is something that we can find in a lot of psychological thrillers. When we look throughout movies in this genre, such as, Fight Club, Memento, early in the 90s, we had movies like The Game, all these things. Yep. They lean so heavily on subjectivity, or like, let's say this, the unreliable
point of view,
the unreliable narrator, where the person who is telling the story, or through whom we are experiencing the story, in this case, Teddy Daniels, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, we kind of get clues that his reality is somehow wrong. And I think one of the ones that caught me when I was watching it for this review was that scene where he's talking to the woman, he's interviewing this woman who is a mental patient, and he serves her a glass of water and she picks up a glass and drinks it, but there is no glass. She's drinking nothing. And then she puts it down, but there's a glass there.
And there's no water.
And you're like, wait a minute, what happened there? It's like, is that a mistake by the director? It's like they forget to put a glass there? It's like, is that an error in continuity? But there's these little hints throughout the movie that reality is not as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even see this in several other clues. We talked a little bit about some of the musical cues that don't make a lot of sense in this movie, particularly mm-hmm. in the use of a quartet by Mahler in one of the scenes. We get some really surreal images when he is investigating, especially that Civil War Ford, when he goes inside and then he sees a lot of crazy things and people saying crazy things and stuff like that. So there's always this this question is like, what is this? This all feels like a dream. And that lends itself to the point of view of Teddy Daniels. And so I want to think about what this movie tells us about how we experience our own reality. Because as you said, sometimes we choose to interpret reality in ways that are not in line with the Bible. And I think this is why in the book of Psalms, not Psalms, but it's Proverbs 3, verse 5 and 6. Solomon tells us, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways submit to him and he will make your path straight. And here we get into something a little bit more philosophical, which is the idea of what constitutes your reality. And I subscribe to the idea that we all get to choose what a reality is. But in spite of that, there is truth out there. And that truth for you and me is that there is a God who has an overarching plan for you and me and for the entire world. So we can choose to accept truth as reality, but we can also choose to make up our own reality. And this is what we see what Teddy Daniels is doing in this movie, where he is creating his own narrative where he is the hero, where he is, even though he still feels guilt and pain, he is still kind of like this honorable figure. He is a U.S. Marshal. He is a war veteran. He killed many Nazis and stuff like that. So that just reminded me of that verse and that concept that we find in scripture. Do we choose truth or do we choose to make up our own reality?
That is a fascinating question. And also, I think I'm glad you kind of, I'm not going to say systematized it, but you clarified something that we have an assumption that there is absolute truth out there. Some people don't make that assumption about reality and believe everything is just subjective to the viewer. I will say, though, that a lot of times, and we saw this, and we learned this in a class that we took together, I'm not sure which one, Lido, but the idea that, like, this God of the Gaps idea, I don't know if you remember that term, that basically people have, when they are not able to explain something about their reality, that's the place that they have put this idea of a higher being, the idea of God. And so, like, they're trying to explain their own reality, and in the places where they cannot, they're like, okay, well, that's where God is. That's supernatural. And so what ends up happening is over time, with more scientific discoveries and such, you know, you can explain more of your reality, apparently, and then eventually God has a smaller and smaller place in the world and in the universe. And that, too, is a flawed way of viewing how God works in the world. So that's kind of like if Teddy Daniels' character, you know, just only believed because of those moments that he didn't understand something, right? Like, he plugged in things that, like, okay, this is how I explain it. I only believed that was the only way. For example, like, he only believed the narrative that was given to him by the psychiatrist because only in those moments. Like, I'm good, but, oh, that makes sense in those little moments that I did not understand what was going on. That's when I believe what they're saying instead of believing that the whole story that he's telling himself is false. Right. So, and so I don't know if that I'm making myself very clear, but the idea is that in order for us to adopt God's view of the universe, we cannot just limit it to the moments where we can explain something. It has to be comprehensive. It has to encompass all of our worldview. It cannot just, we cannot pick and choose where we want God to be in our reality, because then it becomes very disjointed and it's still not reliable. In the same way that Teddy Daniels' story was not reliable, even in some of the apparently very solid details, such as the fact that he was a U.S. Marshal, right? Like, things like that, like, currently a U.S. Marshal. So, yeah, that's something that I would say, again, with the idea of what is real and how does it connect with the theological, reality, but theological themes and biblical themes in our own world, in our own experiences.
So yeah, so I want to ask you a question. So at the end, there's a kind of a debate that people have over the ending of this film, because of course, after he has already admitted that he is, you know, he is delusional, that he killed his wife because she killed his children, we get the last scene where Chuck, or like the doctor, comes to him and asks him a question, and he responds as if he were still delusional. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And of course, he looks over to the warden and Ben Kingsley, who is like the head psychiatrist, just to tell them, you know, this guy is like beyond repair. We're going to have to lobotomize mm-hmm. him.
Like, it didn't work. Yeah.
The last thing that Leonardo DiCaprio says is, like, I wonder if it's better to die as a good man or live as a monster.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you think at that moment Leonardo DiCaprio is lucid or is he delusional?
I think right there he's lucid. And here's the reason why I think he's lucid. Because he does not put up a fight when the police officers come, right? Like the warden, the police mm-hmm. officers come and the orderlies come. He gets up and follows them, right? Like if we were going to say that he was still living his you know, dream and his delusion, he would fight to try to get back to the ferry. Like that would be his True. That would be his goal. But in that moment, when he sees the cops come for him, he sees the orderly come for him with the ice pick, which is, you know, the symbol that he's going to get a lobotomy. He doesn't fight. They didn't even have to, like, restrain him. He just follows them. Like, he knows what's going to happen, but he's not fighting.
He actually
kind
of leads the way, doesn't he?
Exactly. And that, to me, that's why it's like, he knows. Like, he understands. And then you have Mark Ruffalo's idea, like, his face kind of, like, shocking, like, and then he calls him by his name. He says, Teddy, and he doesn't respond to Teddy anymore. So to me, that's like, okay, he knows who he is. He knows what's going on, but he did it on purpose to just die as a hero, basically pretend like he's still a good person.
Okay, so what do you think the message is being communicated? What message is being communicated through that action, where he kind of accepts this reality and he accepts the lobotomy, even though in that moment he is lucid?
I think it tells me that there are situations that are so hard to accept that you would prefer a lie instead of the truth. Like,
okay.
That to some people, and maybe to, I wouldn't say that to all of us, because I don't think that's true, but to some people, it is easier to give up their consciousness than to see themselves as something that they cannot accept for themselves. Does that make sense? Like, it's easier for me to forget all about a situation and lose part of myself than to see myself as like something that would eat me up inside, right? Like, if that guilt that would, instead of living with that guilt that would eat me up inside, I would much rather quiet it, deny it, and just say, forget it, it's not true, or just take it away somehow. I'm willing to sacrifice that in order to give up this guilt that is eating me alive.
I guess. So let's talk about guilt for a moment, because we touched upon this a little bit before, because the whole reason why, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, his character, is delusional and he has all these problems is because he cannot deal with his guilt. He cannot deal with the fact that his wife killed his, you know, his three children because he did not get her help when she needed it. And then he killed her after she killed his children. And so this whole, this is a whole kind of like circle of guilt that he's kind of can't deal with, the truth. And it made me think of our place as Christians, because if we are to accept the Christian narrative, to accept the Bible actually tells us is that basically you and I are, in the eyes of God, are considered criminals. Mm-hmm. Because we have, of course, we have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And the penalty that we should pay for that sin is death. Mm-hmm. So in if we take it that way, and then the movie, it's like in the movie, we present a very bleak view of ourselves, a very bleak view of humanity. But what I find that is a comforting better in scripture is that we have redemption, that Jesus Christ has offered us redemption. As it says in 1 John, that if we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us and our sins and cleanse us from all our unrighteousness. In fact, in Isaiah 53, it says that he carried all our iniquities with him, and upon him was borne all our griefs. And as in this old sanctuary system, like we have a scapegoat to kind of like, okay, he's going to bear the burden of our sins because of grace. And we have that promise that our, you know, that since we have been justified by faith, we have peace with God, basically. Mm-hmm. And I find that this is the opposite of what this movie represents. And I think this movie has a very depressing view of humanity. And it's something that at the end really made me feel empty inside, because it seemed to me that the film was saying that humanity sucks and it is better to die than to like own up to that fact. Mm-hmm. By that last scene where he says, is it better to die a good man or to live as a monster? And he chooses to die a good man. It's like the movie is saying, yeah, we're better off dead than, you know, incurring incurring pain and violence as we live. And this is how I kind of connected it to one of the most bizarre scenes in the film for me, which is the scene where the warden picks up Leonardo DiCaprio after the storm, and he's riding back with him. He starts talking about God's gift of violence and how violent humanity is, and I'm just like, what does this have to do with anything? Mm-hmm. And then I kind of realized that at the point where the warden said, you know, I know you. You know, you and I have been fighting. You and I have known each other for, you know, centuries. And it's okay. So he's saying basically that humanity has been violent and will always be violent. There's like this cycle of violence. And I think that connects even to the character of Teddy, who his guilt and his part of his persona was the atrocities that he saw during World War II. And how kind of that kind of put him into an alcoholic state, and kind of, you know, it started him down the path of what he would eventually become at the end. And basically how it depicts his delusions, where the doctor says, so we see this pattern with you, you know, we start to make some progress, you start to accept reality, but then you fall right back into it. And I think that's even more than just saying a statement about the character, saying that is a statement about humanity, that humanity often seems like we're past the point of war, we past the point of like this needless violence, but after some time we will inevitably fall into it.
You know, I just thought of a theme as you were sharing, and I'm really resonating with some of the things that you're saying right now. But I just realized that the movie could be also making a point about even the people in society that we expect to be good, quote unquote, or just, are really flawed, right? Because Teddy Dan, you know, even Andrew Laidis, he really was a police marshal. It's that part of the movie, they say, like, you did do this job before, you know, when you were married and stuff, before you murdered your wife. But yet, for him, it was so hard because he saw himself as a good person, as a soldier, and as a policeman, that when he committed an act that was against that code or against that belief of himself, he was a conflict. He was at odds. But then you also have the warden, who's supposed to be, you know, potentially a person doing something good. He also enjoys that violence. It seems like it's portrayed like that. And then you also have the psychiatrist, not Ben Kingsley character, but the one that's supposedly at war with him, that likes the lobotomy. He's supposed to be, you know, a person for good in society, but in reality, he's doing unspeakable things to individuals and to people through lobotomies. And so it's like, it presents this idea that even people who are understood to be good are still flawed and still have dark sides to them. And I think this is a biblical idea, you know, that no one is good. Like, no one is above reproach. Isaiah would say that even, you know, our best acts are like dirty rags, right? And so there's something about the movie that presents that even the people that seem to have good intentions can be flawed. Now, you may argue Ben Kingsley's character and Mark Ruffalo's character, they legitimately seem to have good intentions. But overall, and I think in the climate that we're in, with the way that people are doubting police and the role that they're playing in our society, there's something about the movie that kind of speaks to that as well, you know? That that even the people that we're tasked to do and keep justice and to do the right thing can be flawed and can sometimes do the bad things.
Definitely. And yeah, I just think that when we look at it all as a package, when you see even like the psychiatrist played by Mark Ruffalo and Ben Kingsley, who really want to, you know, help people get better, and basically, you know, at one point Ben Kingsley says that the difference between him and other psychiatrists, that other psychiatrists kind of look at these people like maybe like animals, but like he chooses to see them as people. He has this radical belief that if you treat, you know, even these patients as people, you know, you can get through to them and help them to heal. And at the end, I just get this aura of defeat in their case, because it's kind of like they tried everything they could. They kind of they did this whole play along charade with Teddy, and at the end it was for nothing.
Yeah. Like darkness wins, right? Like darkness wins in our collective consciousness, so to speak. You know, I just want to just briefly talk about the idea of symbolism, because in the movie, there's this really heavy symbolism of the fire and the water.
Okay.
And so these two elements are very present. Part of the reason, for example, when you brought up the point when he was interviewing that other patient, that he didn't see the glass of water, he only saw the glass once it was empty of water, is because he has a strong aversion to water because of the way that his children died, drowned. And so when the movie starts out, he is on this ferry and he's really sick. He's like throwing up. And it's fascinating. He tells himself, "Get yourself together, Teddy," which is kind of like a meta-narrative of the whole movie. But anyway, he has like a strong aversion to water, and like seeing water really gets to him. Same thing with fire. Like, he doesn't have an aversion to fire necessarily, but he won't light fires himself. Like, all the time he has other people light matches for him to light his cigarettes and stuff like that. It is only towards the end of the movie that he is actively lighting fires himself, right? Like when he goes to Ward C and stuff like that, that's when he's like lighting matches. But in that moment, it's kind of like he's trying to maintain, that's what I've heard some commentators say too. It's like he's trying to maintain the fantasy that his wife died in a fire. And so at that point, the idea of fire is him trying to keep alive that fantasy. And when he lights fires, when he's talking to that prisoner called, Simon, I think, that tells him the truth, basically, when he lights the fires, the matches, he starts seeing his wife, right? It's in those moments that he sees his wife again, telling him, like, "Hey, don't believe this, like, fight for me, et cetera, et cetera." Like, he's getting the illusion. So all this to say that there's strong symbolism in the movie between water and fire and how that affects him mentally because of the events that have happened in his life. And the reason why I think this is interesting is because this is a minor point for sure, but in the Bible, symbols are also very strong and apparent throughout the biblical narrative. And so when we keep our eyes open to the symbolisms found in the Bible, we can learn some pretty amazing things. For example, in the Bible, fire a lot of times represents God's presence, and we see that whether that's in the pillar of fire in the desert, whether it's you know, when the first sacrifice is made, even in the tabernacle or in the temple of Solomon, fire comes down from heaven to consume it, and then you have that fire that is supposed to never go out, and that's the only fire that you're supposed to use going into God's presence. You also have, with Elijah, the fire that comes down from heaven to consume the sacrifice. The Bible says that God is like a consuming fire. Isaiah would say that the saints are going to be living in the presence of fire. So this idea that fire, in some level, represents God and his maybe expression of himself, if we want to put it that way, and feel free, other scholars or theologians, you too, Adido, to correct me on that. But that's just fascinating to see how like different symbols in the Bible are important. You also have like the light versus dark idea present very clearly in the Gospel of John and in other parts of the Bible as well. And so I just thought that was fascinating and something to keep in mind when you read the Bible, that, hey, if there are recurring symbols, there may be something that the Bible is trying to tell you that you could learn and glean from that will be beneficial to you as you study the Bible yourself, as you connect with the stories in the Bible, the message in the Bible.
Yeah, I agree completely. This is something else that I wanted to touch upon, because I think for me, the first time I watched it maybe like 7-8 years ago, I was really kind of mind blown by the craft of the movie in the sense that at the end, when Ben Kingsley speaking to him, that you're actually a patient here, you're mentally deranged, you have delusions, all this stuff. The first time I watched it, I was like, no, this guy's playing him. It's like, this guy's deceiving him. And I just found it so interesting when a movie can make you feel identified with a character, even though, you know, they're telling him that he's crazy. It's illustrating something that the movie, I think, is trying to also get across, that we ought to treat people, you know, people who perhaps have mental illnesses, who have delusions, you know, schizophrenia, whatever these things, that we really ought to put ourselves in their shoes. Because in this movie, we kind of, we're in the shoes. We followed a schizophrenic person believing that this person was, you know, an honorable person with, you know, feelings and guilt and stuff like that. And we often don't see other people who have, you know, mental illnesses that way. And so I think that's also something that we can get out of this movie, how to treat people who are different. And just another shout out to the incredible filmmaking that we see in this movie, not just like the use of symbolism, but also the writing, the perspective, the way some of the scenes are color edited and stuff like that. I think it's just masterful. And when we talk about this genre of psychological thrillers, I don't think a lot of people think of Shutter Island, and I think we really should, because it's a great film in its craft. And I think people should definitely check it out if you like these types of movies. Once again, we do not recommend it if you are squeamish to some of the violence and, let's say, kind of unsettling images that are presented here. But we definitely recommend it as a good flick, maybe not completely in accordance with what we find in the Bible, but definitely has some stuff to think about. And isn't that why we're here?
That's why we're here, Dido. And one more thing that I just want to say. I think the movie portrays the importance of memory. And that's, you know, how his memories, right? Teddy Daniels, DiCaprio's characters, his memories affected his perception of reality so strongly. And I think this is something that we find in the Bible, the idea that we need to remember the way that God has worked in the past, remember who we have been, how we've been helped in the past, and let that kind of inform who we are in the present and who will be in the future. So we have instances, for example, where Joshua will, you know, bring out stones from the Jordan River and set them up as memorials for other generations to know what happened, how God delivered them. You have the very fact that we have the Bible is an evidence of the importance of memory. The fact that Moses decides to start writing, you know, the story of the Exodus and the story of Genesis and all this in order to serve as something that will help people in the future remember their identity, either individually or collectively. And I think, to me, the movie really touches on this idea of the importance of memory as a way to understand reality well, and as a necessity, really, for maybe who we are, you know?
This is something we talked about in our Lion King review, where we touched upon the theme of facing up to our past and the things that we have done, and accepting the responsibility of, you know, of our mistakes. Mm-hmm. I think that's something we also find here too, where we see kind of the consequence when you don't own up to your mistakes and the responsibility that comes with it as well.
I think I'm good. I have more. I feel like I still have questions on this movie rather than answers. So we love to hear from you. That's good from my end. I'm not sure if you have something else, but hey, listen, we'd love for you to join the conversation again. Send us an email, cinema. theology@gmail.com. Send us a message on Facebook, either individually to Dido or myself, or at our Facebook page. Do something on Twitter, you know, at Cinema Theo. We'd love to hear from you. This is a movie that many perspectives actually enrich the way that we see this movie, because there's different things. There's so many things and details in this movie that can be drawn out from and can be analyzed.
Definitely. And you can also find us on Instagram. Just look up Cinema Theology and you should find us there. And you can also, we'd love to interact with you guys and, you know, get your perspectives and your opinions on this movie or any movie we've done so far. You can also look at our past episodes on Anchor or Spotify or Apple Podcasts. So check us out there. You can also recommend any movie you would like us to review in the future, and we will take it into consideration as well. So with that said, we're going to be signing off until next week.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
See you later.